Contest of Champions, episode number 24, Lady Deathstrike versus Wonder Man.
Let's get ready to rumble! Contest of Champions. It's the CLC!
Welcome back once again, comic book fans, to the second exciting season of the Contest of Champions Live, episode number 24. We are excited to welcome you back, listeners, and our wonderful competitors, to this, the premier online comic book game of the century. As always, returning this week as your COC Live host with the most is myself, the clobbering clergyman, Jeff Jackson, and of course, my Canadian compatriot, the Cape Killer, Mr. Ian Johnson. How you doing, Ian?
Really good. How are you?
I'm fair to middling, is what we say down here in the South.
We've been having unseasonably warm weather up here.
Yes.
And I got to say, it's really hurting my work productivity.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm not very productive work-wise. Like, I'm productive in my yard and outside and
that's
finishing
work.
Any beers, but
yeah. Have you got the pool open yet?
No. I started today though.
Okay.
It's a process, right? You got to understand. We have to put a winter cover on.
Yeah.
So I just finished pumping all the water off of my winter cover, which is a big task because there's leaves and guck and stuff in it. So I got to get all that out before I take it off or else it'll all go into the pool.
Right.
And then I've got to refill the pool. It's not completely empty. It's about half empty. Refill the pool and then we're good to go. I have a saltwater pool, so I don't have to put chemicals and stuff into it.
Okay. Well, that sounds like fun, but it's worth it once you get all that done, right?
Oh, Lord, yeah, it is.
Nice. And with us this week is our fantastic competitors, a real-life superhero who once punched a hang glider out of the sky, Mr. Eli Anthony.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Nice.
And the ever-forgiving Infinite Speech.
Wow, I've never been called that.
I know, well, you know, You are ever forgiving.
You guys have to read between the lines with those. That was my clever writing.
Gotcha.
Really?
So Eli, you're punching a hang glider. That's with your whole iron fist punching a air carrier love affair.
Okay. Easy now. Don't start.
And then speech. That was because we knew you were still angry about the living laser fiasco.
I just figured you guys had like a lot of drinks and alcohol. Did a lot of peyote that night.
I don't think we do peyote.
Hey, yeah. When I had a lot of drinks was on the night of the draft when I let you draft him in good conscience.
Ooh.
I mean, you let Eli draft Wonder Man and Vision. I mean, so come on.
Hey. Ian will probably always let Vision in.
No matter what. I have a yellow cape cap. But you can go ahead and draft Vision because he's my favorite.
I think Vision's a good matchup with Iron Man. I do even to just today. I have some questions about letting Wonder Man in.
Yeah.
I just do because he had a mullet for over 20 years and wore a members only jacket and fought crime, and they took him seriously.
Members only jacket, a red members only jacket, and black spandex tights. Like, can you imagine seeing that, like, in real life?
Yeah, if I was a villain, I would just, look, I'm just too busy laughing to even commit my crime, so thank you.
Wow.
See, even villains. Better. He doesn't even have to lift a finger. They just give up their night of crime that they had tonight and go make their grandmother some tea.
All right. We're getting ahead of ourselves.
Yeah. All right, so last week, We saw a really good fight featuring Hellion versus Emma Frost in the Savage Land Jungle. This was a perfect student versus teacher fight, and it created a lot of scenarios for us, both during the podcast and on the Comic Attack forums. For more of this really great action, go and check it all out on the comicattack.former.com site. The poll itself, just let me go there in real time.
Whoa, somebody's doing dishes.
That's dedication.
Is that you, Eli?
Yeah, I'm multitasking.
All right. Very good.
Did he just say, wait, my mom's going to take that?
I think
I'm tired of taking this. You live up there in Canadian land, buddy.
All right.
I have bad hearing. So the poll has Emma Frost ahead, 73% of the votes, that's 8 votes, and Hellion at 27% of the votes at 3 votes. So the poll has Emma, I'm just going to update this, the poll has Emma as the winner. Jeff, did you want to go first or do you want me to go first?
I think I went first last week, so you go first.
Okay. This is one of those fights where me and Jeff have been doing this little gig for quite a while now, many years, and every once in a while a fight rolls along where you kind of hope that one of the two managers or maybe both of them hit on a certain point, and it never ever really comes up. Now, I know with Tom, for instance, Tom was completely indisposed, and you know it was almost unfair we even made him fight because the guy's sending us his rationale from Ireland, and I don't know, what was it, 2-3 in the morning or something like that? And then, you know, he obviously wasn't going to get on the forums and post a lot of back talk and stuff like that. And Eli, being the consummate pro that he always is, I noticed didn't flood the forums with tons and tons and tons of rationales. I think knowing that Tom wasn't going to be there to rebut any of them. Is that right, Eli?
That is correct, yes.
Yeah. And Eli's...
You're a nice guy.
Well, and he's done that in the past too, right? And I love that about Eli. He wants it to be a nice, fair fight. With that being said, though, one of the things that I was talking to Jeff before the show about is that the Savage Land is famous for having these dead spots in the Savage Land where telepathy no longer works. People's powers are negated. It's got all these weird, it's almost like the Bermuda Triangle, do you know what I mean, with all these weird spots. And we've seen it happen before in lots of X-Men books where the telepaths just instantly, their telepathy is no good anymore. And the Savage Land is a prime place for this. So I would have played up that angle, I think, a little bit more, and had Tom maybe been able to convince me on that angle more, I might have been able to buy, you know, that Hellion would have at least been able to get close to Emma Frost. I think that it would have been hard for Emma Frost to locate Hellion in the Savage Land. There's too many minds, too many thinking, sentient minds roaming around in there. But with that being said, I do think she does get to him without having to be in, you know, visual range or anything like that. And I think she gets control of him pretty easy. The other thing being too is if there's one person on the planet in 616 reality that Hellion's going to be, you know, somewhat in awe of, it's Emma Frost. He always has been. When they were broken into their little groups during the new X-Men series, even before it was that, when it was Academy. Was that right? No.
Yeah, it was New X-Men, Academy X or something like that?
Academy X or whatever it was. And he was always, she was his mentor the whole time. And she, you know, she berated him and talked down to him. She was the only one who could keep him in control, kind of thing. So I think that's always going to be there. Like, that's always going to be in the back of his mind. Unfortunately, I think, and I love Hellion, and I would have loved to seen Hellion go further in this competition because he's a character that's near and dear to my heart. And Emma Frost definitely is not a character who's near and dear to my heart. But I, again, like a couple of the other matches, I think this is a bad match. It is a bad matchup for Hellion. And so I went with Emma Frost.
So that makes it 2 against my vote. So it doesn't really matter what I have to say because that already puts Emma over. But for the sake of argument, I think this battle is actually a lot closer than we might think. But Emma did unlock. Emma unlocked all of Hellion's power, so he's not just a student anymore. I mean, he's really got full capabilities of a full telepath or a full telekinetic. So, however, that being said, if you go back and look at Dark Avengers number 7, which was during the crossover between Uncanny X-Men and Dark Avengers, where it was the Utopia storyline, where they were founding Utopia, and Hellion had started a riot in San Francisco, and Emma Frost teleports in as the leader of Norman Osborn's Dark X-Men. Do you guys remember that?
Mm-hmm.
She immediately engages Julian, and Julian hits her with this huge TK blast, which, number one, she blocks in diamond form. She just holds up her arm, and she blocks it. And then in the next second, she switches to out of her diamond form into her telepathic form, and she mind blasts him, and he's down for just a little bit, but he's down. The rest of Julian's crew gets taken out by the Dark X-Men, and Julian ends up being the last man standing, but they end up capturing him and taking him back to Osborn's headquarters. And so I think that, you know, it's pretty fair to say in that series she pretty much shuts him down telepathically. And even though later – only if – even if it's just for a bit, later on he kind of makes a little bit of a comeback. But anyway – so that, to me, was the proof in the pudding when I went back and researched that and found that. So I also picked Emma Frost.
What do Gid, Eli, what do you guys think?
I actually had to end up going with Emma because I knew about the dead spots and just there's all the animal and plant life there. And I'm pretty sure they'd end up meeting up. But when it comes down to it, their past relationship and the fact that I do think he'd slip up and be still in awe and he wouldn't want to just go all out and kick her ass. But I do think she'd find an opening and get to him and just knock him out.
I forgot about the dead spots. So I'm glad Tom didn't bring it up. And, I mean, it's not like, but also it's just a guess, you know, where it is and where she is in relation to them. And, but I also didn't think that Hellion would go all out to try and destroy her. That didn't make sense to me.
See, actually, I think he would. I think you said something. You asked the question about whether or not Hellion was the type of person to kind of obliterate a section of people with innocent people around, and he totally would.
He is now.
Yeah. Yeah. He's
ever since he lost his arms, he's...
Oh,
he's,
yeah. He's well, he was like that even before. I mean, even in that Dark Avengers series, he was... I mean, he was ready to kind of kick some ass in San Francisco with all of the rioting that was going on about mutants and all this. But, yeah, even more so now. He's pretty ruthless.
But would he do it to her?
If he knew he had to fight her and win, he would. But that's what I think. But it doesn't matter because she won.
Yeah. I guess it doesn't. Guess it doesn't.
Yeah.
All right.
Congratulations, Eli.
Thanks.
On your first win of the fight, of the game.
I've decided I don't think I'm going to lose this tournament, so.
Oh.
Nice.
Wow.
I like Gid, what do you think about that?
Oh, it's nice to have hopes and dreams. But I appreciate a confident opponent.
Hey, we have fitting streaks going already, man. You got the loss, I got the win. I say we just keep that up.
All right, so before tonight's fight, I just thought we could take a minute to talk about a little bit of news in the world of funny books. I didn't have a whole lot of interesting news. I mean, there's some semi-interesting stuff out there right now, some cool facts about the Avengers movie and stuff like that, but I thought I'd stick to one thing. And I actually threw this in for Jeff. This is in honor of Jeff. And it's all about Rob Liefeld taking over a handful of titles in DC's new 52 universe. And so the way I wrote it is one of Jeff's all-time favorite artists is taking over three struggling DC titles. Image innovator and anatomically incorrect artist extreme.
Extreme, yeah. Woo.
Rob Liefeld is taking over Grifter, Deathstroke, and Savage Hawkman in May. On the retail charts, Grifter placed 126th, Deathstroke placed 104th, and Hawkman placed 103rd. And there's been a lot of talk about there's been a lot of talk, and actually I think in season one, Jeff, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think this came up in one of our recordings even, about how DC's really started to dominate the top 10 spots in terms of retail ever since the New 52 reboot. But I read something interesting online that was talking about how analysts were saying, you know, this is true, that DC's really, you know, got a good handle on those top 10 spots. But Marvel still has a bigger market share in terms of the sales, and that's because they have huge dominance over the midsection of the retail chart. So from, you know, the DC has the top 10, and then Marvel has huge dominance over, like, from 10 to 60 or something like that. And that's what they, that's what Marvel's been boasting a lot about, you know, that they don't have the top 10, but sure, but they've got all the others. So, and the other interesting thing that I thought was interesting little side note to that was that Liefeld's Hawk and Dove was already canceled. And when it was canceled, it was ranked, I think, 136th on the retail charts beyond everything. So, and Eli would know better than I would, but I think of those three books that I listed with Grifter, Deathstroke, and Hawkman, I think he's writing two of them and drawing one. I think he's drawing Deathstroke. Is that right, Eli?
I don't know about the writing, but he is supposed to be drawing Deathstroke.
Right.
And they've already published some of the artwork in. I mean, you, it's atrocious.
The cover is horrible.
Oh, my goodness.
Looks like Cable Shatterstar.
Yes.
Here, well, if you follow Liefeld on Twitter, he kind of has this tone about him as though he's coming in and he's saving these titles, which I find amusing.
It is a grim, grim time when, in order to save your book, you have to put Rob Liefeld on it. I mean, I'm sorry. If I was a Grifter, Deathstroke, or Hawkman fan, I would be crying right now. But all the more power to him. At least it's at DC. I mean, I don't want him taking over three titles at Marvel. I mean, good grief. Let him stay at DC. Let's play some bets on how long this is going to last. I mean, Rob Liefeld has never done a long-lasting series. He's never done anything. I mean, even look at that horrible book that we reviewed at Tales from the Water Cooler,
The Infinite.
I mean, even that which
ironically got, you know, shut down early.
Yeah, they couldn't even keep that going because there were creative differences, differences means Robert Kirkman was like, are you serious? You're going to draw this? Are you serious?
Yeah.
And that was the difference. That's my theory, at least. But,
well, and again, Eli can tell me I'm wrong here because he would know better than me, being more of a DC loyalist. But when I look at Grifter and I look at Deathstroke and Hawkman, they're three cool characters. They really are. But they're the kind of characters, I don't know if they could sustain their own book. You know, like, I like Hawkman on a team. You know what I mean? I think Hawkman's a great team guy. Deathstroke, you know, he's good when he's the bad guy. And he's in somebody else's book and attacking them. Grifter, I don't know. I don't know what you do with that character, but
put him back on Wildcats.
Yeah.
Start a new Wildcats book. Seriously, why aren't they doing that?
Yeah, I don't know anything about Grifter, actually, except he's got that weird red thing on his face. I don't know what that's about. Hawkman is an awesome character, and Deathstroke is one of the coolest characters from any universe. I think Deathstroke could sustain his own book for a while. I don't really know much about the Hawkman mythos. I know there's a Hawk Girl, and she was cool in the Justice League cartoons, but... Mm-hmm. But Slade can definitely keep interest, and I think sell a book for, I don't know, year and a half, two, I would think. Not with Liefeld at the helm.
You know what they should do with Deathstroke? They should have Deathstroke, I don't know how to explain this, they should have Deathstroke's books be from his perspective and then have him in the other books, so in the other DC books, and they're showing it like they're fighting Deathstroke and you see it from that perspective. And then when you buy the Deathstroke book, it's his perspective of the same skirmish, like the same fight. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And then that way you backdoor him into those other storylines, but you get the death stroke, right? You get the cool death stroke.
See, I think that would work. I'd like that for a little while.
Yeah, I think it'd be,
you know, I mean, they could Deathstroke, they could keep that going for a while. Mm-hmm. I don't know about the other two, but it's definitely not going to happen. I won't buy it with Liefeld drawing it. I can't stand it, the art. I don't know how he keeps getting work when there are so many awesome guys who would love to work and be able to continue to feed their families making comics who are out there self-publishing or scraping by.
No. Especially when you have the Infinite situation and the Hawk and Dove situation, like the reason that those two things got canceled was because of Rob Liefeld. I don't understand why people don't see that. And you know, but I'm gonna make a declaration right now. If any one of these books gets into the top 10 of the retail charts, I will shave everything on my body.
Whoa.
I will shave my – I have a beard. I will shave my beard. I will shave my head completely bald. I'll shave my chest and my arms. I will go all out.
Everything, Jeff?
Everything. I will
look like a brand new baby.
I will. I promise you. If one of these books – I'm going on record. If one of these books gets in the top 10 – Then I will do that.
That may be the least risky thing you've ever
yeah, said. I know, exactly. Yeah.
In order to make that bet interesting, you'd have to say like top 50, I think.
No.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Make it 50,
Jeff. Give us
Jeff.
Something to shoot for. Give us something to shoot for.
All right, I'll do 50. Okay, I'm that confident. I'm confident.
Back by Deathstroke, baby.
I start pumping that book like mad.
The only way to sell Rob Liefeld books is for.
I wonder what would happen if they put him on Batman.
Oh my God!
Don't put that idea in the universe.
I can tell you what happens.
Bob Kane, Bill Finger, and Jerry Robinson zombies would storm his home and kill him.
Dude, all I know is that if you thought Batman had a lot of pouches before, he's gonna have pouches like on his like cowl. He's gonna have pouches like.
You'll have utility bandolier. Bracelets, utility anklets.
Yeah.
Well, no.
Eye belts.
He wouldn't have utility anklets because Rob doesn't draw that far down.
That's right. What am I thinking?
That's
right.
Yeah.
That would get me angry.
Yeah. That
we got it. Hey Jeff, we got it. We have to send this link for this podcast right directly to Liefeld.
I think we should see what he does with it. See what he does with it. So, all right. Well, for those of you who are just tuning in to us, maybe for the first time, the COC is a superhero game that Cape Killer and I created about 5 years ago, and we invited our comic book enthusiast buddies over to argue who could beat up who in a fight in the world of comics. And for this game, currently, we are using an Iron Man power cap, which means no character can be more powerful than the Golden Avenger. And so we have five managers who drafted five characters apiece, hoping to be able to convince Ian and me and you listeners out there that their characters are the toughest in any given situation. So you can go back and listen to the live draft in episode one, or you can go to comicattack.former.com and look up all the stuff on the forum appropriately titled COC Podcast. So go and check out all of that.
We have a question this week, and this question was great because I don't know if you guys checked the forum, but Bill Dunleavy asked the COC team what we think about the DC reboot in terms of Marvel using the same strategy to clean up their continuity and whatnot. And the funny thing is that Billy put this question out in the forums, and then one of our good friends John, who goes by Shen Valley Initiative. He started freaking out because he actually thought that Marvel was going to reboot their universe, and you know he thought that Billy had some inside knowledge or something like that. Marvel was going to kick the whole works to the can. So the question is, how would we feel about Marvel taking the same road as DC?
Well, in some ways they are doing it. Maybe not in terms of continuity, but in terms of renumbering and rebooting. I mean, if you look at all the uncluttering of, take for instance, Daredevil. They have recently rebooted Daredevil with a new number one. They've really uncluttered his continuity. You really don't have, you can start with that number one and not really know much of anything else about Daredevil before that. And there's not a lot of continuity kind of holding Daredevil back. So it's not that it's a new continuity, it's still in continuity. But they're doing that a lot with some of their lower tier books, is that they're starting over from number ones. And in some ways, it's not a hard reboot, but it is a renumbering at least. So they're doing that slowly, I think. But I don't think Marvel would do it at this point. What do you guys think?
I hope.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Gid. You go.
I was just saying, I hope not. I mean, they don't have to do the whole reboot thing. They can just tweak some writing and tell some good original stories and stick with what they have. I mean, there's no point in going back and trying to scrap it and start from zero, because it will always be compared to what DC did, because, in fact, DC did it first. Like I said, I may not have agreed with it, but I do feel it was a ballsy move to, you know, just restart your entire line of books. So, yeah, I don't think Marvel needs to. They just need to stick with what they have, clean it up with some good, solid stories, and just keep going from right there.
Yeah, no, I agree 100% with speech. I you know, hat off to DC. It was a very ballsy move. When it was first suggested, I laughed my ass off, and I thought, you know, what a chicken shit way to go, and, you know, way to once again, you know, find a backdoor out of this whole thing and stuff like that. And it turned out to be pretty good. So, you know, I'm eating my words with that whole thing. And, you know, I guess the result would probably be the same for Marvel, would be my guess. But in all honesty, I think Marvel's done a pretty good job with continuity. I remember complaining pretty hard about continuity, you know, five to seven years ago, and how things just, they made no sense in the Marvel universe from one book to the next. I think enough fans and readers complained for a long enough time that Marvel, they actually addressed that. They started changing that a little bit. And most, you know, for the most part, continuity's not too bad in the Marvel universe. I don't think they need a reboot. And you know, and going the whole new universe route too, it's I don't think that works for them either. When you look, like if you looked at that new Universal book back when they came out with that, what was that, like, I think about 5 years ago, new Universal.
Yeah.
It was a really good book. I enjoyed it quite a bit, but you know, the Marvel readership, they weren't interested in it. So
DC didn't need to do the whole reboot. I mean, of the books that are really, really good right now, I mean, you could say, what do y'all say? The top five books that are probably Batman, Aquaman, Animal Man, Swamp Thing, and Justice League. They didn't need to reboot the entire continuity in order to do what they did, right?
Well, I think it's short term. Like, I think they're experiencing some short, and I think Andy Legal said this back a bunch of months ago too. And you know, as well said, he did a good job of saying it, that it's, their gains are short term right now. They're reaping their rewards right now. It's true, right? But Andy said, talk to me in a year. You know, in 1 year, let's take a look at this again. And I think he's right. I think he was pretty smart in saying that. It's the playing field's going to start leveling out again, and they'll be right back where they were. You know, it's novelty. So we'll see. It's hard, you know, and I don't blame them. It's hard in the comic industry, I think, to take some of these superstar teams, superstar writers and superstar artists, throw them on a book and keep them there. Do you know what I mean? It's difficult to do that. It's difficult to pay them. It's difficult to get the superstars to meet the deadlines. So, you know, they did it for the first little while, and they got Geoff Johns doing a bunch of books and all the other guys, and I think, you know, only time will tell, but I think it'll start to die down. It's, you know, and this is a really taboo thing to say on a comic book show like this, but ultimately you have to remember, it is just comics. And in today's, you know, climate, comics are not really part of the pop culture climate, other than in movies.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's because people are getting that instant gratification right there. They don't have to go back and pick up books and read it. They don't have a story to follow. They can sit there for an hour and a half, 2 hours, and enjoy it.
That's right.
Yeah. And I don't think Marvel needs to do it either. I mean, there are some weird things, but they can be solved fairly easily without a universe-wide, a whole line-wide reboot. But, you know, I mean, I'm sure DC's gotten a pretty good infusion of cash over this. It was a big event. And if they just, you know, came out with that Animal Man book, for example, that thing's fantastic. But, you know, who would care? But it was part of the big thing, and people have been pushing it, and it was number one. And now, you know, a guy like me who always thought Animal Man was a useless joke loves it. And like Andy said, there's plenty of more people coming in who hadn't been buying comics for ever, maybe. And they're looking for Batman number one, Justice League number one. They want to start reading it. So, you know, the bottom line, a year from now, it might all get done away with, but there's going to be some guys looking at charts and numbers who are going to say, good job, well done. You know?
And I don't want to keep this conversation going forever because, you know, I know we're you know, short for time and stuff. But
and we've already talked about DC way too much.
I'm itching to fight.
but the other thing too is that it's a double-edged sword, and I think right now people don't like to read. Like as a teacher, someone in the education system, people don't enjoy reading. They don't read like they used to. You don't see people sitting down reading novels in the same way that they used to. I'm not saying people don't, but not as many. Right? The people just aren't as big readers. They're more like quick hit information people, and I think Marvel and DC need to do a better job of recognizing that. Because when you look at it, what is a comic? A comic is a quick hit of information. Like, so the comic fits perfectly into this internet world. They just have to market, they have to find that niche, like get into that marketing part and really try and sell that aspect of it, I think. Because I think it's perfect. I think comics are, the kids in my class, they die over reading comics. Like they, instead of doing math, they'll have their comic book, like one of my books out, inside their math textbook, reading during math and stuff like that. Like they do it all the time. And I don't just mean like one or two of them, like 15 of them. Do you know what I mean? And it's because I can market it to them. And I think Marvel's just missing, and DC, they're just missing the boat. Like they got to get some people on this and figure out how can we do this. And if I was them, I would start in the schools.
So did I hear you correctly? You're giving your math students comics?
No. I have
a reading class?
No, you have to understand. I teach... That's hard to explain. I teach all the subjects, okay?
Gotcha.
So I don't just throughout the course.
He knows all the things.
No. Ian is awesome. Teacher extraordinaire.
Our education system's different than yours, right? So what happens is when the kids come to us, they only have me as a teacher. The only teacher they get that's not me is their French teacher, who comes in for 40 minutes once a day, okay? So other than that, though, I teach them all the subjects. I teach them science. I teach them math. I teach them everything. And so at the back of my room, I have a pretty extensive library of graphic novels. And the kids, they eat it up. Like, they eat it up. They're killing me because I can't keep up with enough graphic novels for them to read. And I have hundreds of them in the classroom, and they just burn through them. And to be honest with you, if I'm doing science and there's a boy, and right now one of the big problems in Ontario is literacy with boys. They don't like to read. Their literacy scores are way down. If I'm doing science and there's boys in my class and they're reading instead of doing the science for me, I'll be honest with you. I don't yell at them. Do you know what I mean? Like I kind of like it. Do you know what I mean? Because you read, you get smarter. There's no question about it. You know what I mean?
Ian's teacher of the year in Canada.
He is, man. Everybody out there listening, send your, you know, your lightly used graphic novels to Cape Killer.
I thought you were going to say your lightly used children.
Yeah. There was people on our previous site, Jeff, that they actually would send me boxes of graphic novels to use in my classroom.
That's cool.
It was beautiful.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome.
Anyway, sorry.
All right. Well, good conversation there. Thanks, Billy, for sending us a question. And anybody else out there wants to ask us a question, you can do so by going to the Ask the COCers thread in the forums at comicattack.net. So tonight's fight features Wonder Man, the the members only Wonder Man, Simon Williams, managed by Eli Anthony, and versus Lady Deathstrike, who is managed by Gid. And Eli was scheduled as a home team and determines that tonight's fight, he determined that tonight's fight will take place at the Peak Space Station, which is owned by S.W.O.R.D. and used by S.W.O.R.D. And, again, you can go to the forums and learn about all the fighters and their environments in a thread that will be posted for this very episode. And listen carefully to the podcast, and we'll tell you how to vote and go and where to go and all that stuff after the fight.
All right. I feel I'm going to change this script around. I know this isn't the kind of thing you should say in the podcast, Jeff.
Yeah.
But I feel like we're interrupting the fight too much here, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Doesn't it feel that way?
It feels like it. Yeah.
Should we stay with what we're doing?
Yeah, just keep going. We'll change it next week.
Okay, we'll change it next week. Okay, so before the fight is tradition here on COC Live for all the participants, Jeff, myself, Eli, Gid, we're all going to talk about our favorite fights from the week. It's a good little section in our show because it's a good connection to the COC fights themselves to look at fights in comics. So, Jeff, what's your highlight fight of the week?
Well, speaking of the Peak Space Station, it was featured extensively in Uncanny X-Men number 9, which has been on my it's been on my shit list for a while, the last few months since the reboot of Uncanny X-Men. But I actually really enjoyed this issue, and you can hear more on the next episode of Tales from the Water Cooler. But there was a fight in here that I thought was particularly good, and that was this really creepy robot that Kieran Gillen has created. He created in his former series, the S.W.O.R.D. Series that didn't last very long. But Unit has shown up in Uncanny X-Men, and he's been a prisoner in the brig on the Peak Station. And he is the creepiest guy because he's got this really positive attitude, but he'll do like sick stuff, and in this issue in particular he does some really sick stuff, and but in the end, near the end of the issue, he tricks the Cerebra into thinking that he's a new mutant to show up, and so that triggers Hope Summers' team, the Five Lights, well, which really aren't the Five Lights anymore, but the Generation Hope team, and they go to find who this new mutant is, only to find that it's Unit, who has tricked them, basically, and he takes out the entire team pretty quickly, just so he can get to Hope. And so hopefully that's going to play a part into what's coming up in the Avengers versus X-Men thing. But I just think Unit is a terrific villain. And I'm glad that Kieran Gillen's actually getting being able to use him to his fullest, because he just freaks me out. So,
yeah, he is awesome. No question about it.
Yeah, I mean, in this, well, anyway, I'm not going to say much more. But yeah, he takes down the team really quickly, and they don't do much of anything to him. So,
do they fight in the food court?
No. This was out in the snow in the Canadian wilderness or somewhere where they fought.
Gotcha.
But yeah, I'm pretty sure the food court got blown up when the brig blew up as well. And if we're going with current continuity, you guys might want to think about that when you're discussing the fight tonight.
It means I have to look at an issue of Uncanny X-Men.
You're going to have to read it anyway for the water cooler. So.
That's right. Damn it.
So what got destroyed?
On the Peak Station, there is a brig with all of these alien. And in fact, going back to an earlier fight when we talked about whether or not Venom would be considered a threat at the Peak, this was kind of proven that he would have been, because there are a number of symbiotes that are prisoner at the Peak, and so the Peak Station does have capabilities of containing a symbiote. So that was interesting information, I thought.
That's just alien profiling. That's all it is.
Yeah, exactly.
Not all the symbiotes are bad.
Well, I don't know. So,
hey, it still happened.
Yeah. But anyway, the brig blew up, or basically Unit blew up the brig and disconnected it from the rest of the peak, and it crashed down to Earth, and so all of these different alien criminals basically were all over, and so the X-Men and the Avengers had to team up one last time before the big event this summer, and had to fight all of these aliens. So
it's a great idea, and I loved it. Don't get me wrong, I thought the book was great, but I still couldn't get past the fact that Kieran Gillen was ripping that off from Annihilation. Right?
Remember when? Was he?
Oh yeah, yeah. They totally did the same thing with Annihilation. Oh. That's how Drax the Destroyer and the Blood Brothers and all those guys, they all got down on Earth.
Oh, exactly. That's right. Well, that's right.
Well, shoot. Well, that kind of ruins it a little bit for me.
Just rained on Jeff's parade there.
I might have to switch my pick. Nah, that's all right.
All right, Gid, do you have a fight for us?
My fight comes from Snake Eyes number 11, which is part 8 of the Cobra Command event that's going on. But basically right now, Storm Shadow needs the help of Snake Eyes. So right now they're in the Temple of the Bells. And so what Storm Shadow does to kind of like say, hey, this is my peace offering, he sends a dozen of the Red Ninja Clan to attack him, knowing that Snake Eyes is going to basically kill everyone. But they're in this place called Temple of the Bells, and Snake Eyes just rips these guys apart. But what happens is while he's fighting, he's making his way up atop this gigantic bell, cuts the rope, and crushes like the last 8 or 9 of them. Then the last panel just has him in this really cool pose, and then Storm Shadow comes up, gives him the whole spiel like, you know, you're my brother and I need help, because I have to go kill the guy that killed his master, who just happens to be the brand new Cobra Commander. So that should make for some more pretty cool ninja fight scenes in the issues to come. But it was just a real cool sequence, and plus it was done without much dialogue. It was kind of like the first part of the book started off as like a silent issue. So you just had this huge ninja fight going on against Snake Eyes. So that was pretty cool.
Oh, that's funny. That's and Gid, you would probably be able to correct me on this, but I think when I was a kid, I had a G.I. Joe comic book, and the entire issue was, there was no talking in it whatsoever, and it was just
that's the famous silent issue. There was one done, there was the original one, and then there was one done in G.I. Joe Yearbook where Scarlet and Storm Shadow go to rescue Snake Eyes from Dr. Mindbender.
That's where isn't that where they got the idea for the Nuff Said books in the, it was the early 2000s? Where they did all those silent issues in Marvel, and it was basically kind of an homage.
No, these were in the 80s.
Well, no. In the 2000s, all the Marvel books did one issue that was silent. It was kind of an homage to that G.I. Joe issue from the 80s.
Oh, okay. It could have been. I mean, that right there, those books are my favorite because it lets the artists shine.
Yeah,
I mean, they have no text to fall on. You just have to go by the strength of your art to tell a good story.
Well, I know the Wolverine mini, the first Wolverine mini there in the 80s, they stole a lot of that ideas from it, where he'd go on, you know, the entire book fighting ninjas, and there was no talking whatsoever, and it looked a lot like that G.I. Joe book as well.
Yep, Larry Hama in his heyday.
Nice. Very good. I'm gonna go ahead and do my fight of the week. My fight is it's an interesting fight because it kind of spans the whole book. It's from Wolverine 303, and the reason why I picked my fight was it sort of showcased Mystique in an interesting way for me. And a lot of the ways that we've talked about Mystique on our COC fights over the last like 5 years or so. People have mentioned things like this, but you're very rarely do you actually see it in the book. And in this book, they kind of show it all, and it shows Mystique. She's badass. Like she's tough to beat. Like I don't know how you beat her. And so in one part early in the book, she changes her form to look like somebody else, and to go against this assassin, and gets shot in the head. And goes down, and the assassin believes that it's Lord Deathstrike, and that the assassin believes that he's taken out this big shot from the Japanese Yakuza clan. And then Mystique reverts back to regular form and then talks about how she actually shifted her brain down into her neck so that the headshot wouldn't do anything other than just penetrate her skull. Which I thought was, I was like, wow, that's awesome. You know what I mean? Like, that's, yeah, that's amazing. And then a little bit later in the book, she's fighting Lord Deathstrike. It's kind of like a back and forth panels where they're showing different, Jason Aaron shows different sections of the book at different times. And her and Lord Deathstrike fall off the roof and they're tumbling through the sky. And she grows wings and talons, kind of like a bird, and starts to just like throttle them in the air as they're falling through the sky. Which, you know, again, technically speaking, should be a power that she always has available to her. But for me, and, you know, maybe it's just an oversight on my part, I don't really remember her doing that too often, where, you know, she mimics an animal or something like that and it saves her life. It was pretty cool fight sequence throughout the book with her and this Lord Deathstrike guy.
I love Lord Deathstrike. He's another one of my new favorites. He's fantastic. Although my only problem with that issue is, since when does Sabretooth become a mastermind?
You know? What he's thinking?
No, I mean, yeah, in terms of this whole plan, and it, I don't know. Did y'all?
What? I thought the whole book was a little.
Yeah.
It was suspect. It was a bit hard to follow, to be honest. But I like the fight.
Cool.
All right, Eli, do you have a fight for us?
Yeah, it's not from this week, so I apologize. But I was at work the other day at the library, and I just noticed the Star Wars Darth Vader and the Lost Command trade on the shelf. So I grabbed it because I never read it when it came out. This is from 2011, maybe, I think.
Yeah.
And I think I'm in issue number 3 here. Vader is asleep, dreaming about his old life, his woman, and he it's one of those moments where in the dream it kind of merges with reality a little bit. She tells him that we have to go because there's assassins coming, and he wakes up, and then there's a bunch of dudes storming his chambers to kill him. So he pops up, he busts out his lightsaber, and hey, he says, I like this line. It's not bad. He says, I know who sent you, and he dies next. So it's like in the dream, he figured out who had betrayed the Empire and all that jazz. And, you know, I mean, these are just some weenie Empire guys. You know they're going down, but it's not much of a fight. I mean, it would take more than this to take out Vader, but it's still pretty cool. He tells them to stand down, and you might live long enough to beg for your lives. And one of those idiots goes, open fire! And, of course, I mean, a combination of lightsaber and the Force, and there's a couple of heads that fly, there's a couple of guys that get Force blasted into the wall, a couple of guys who have lightsabers. There's one little panel where he's putting a lightsaber through one guy while with his other hand doing some Force thing and ripping the gun out of another guy's hand. It's pretty cool. And then in the next panel, he's got the guy's gun that he's just magically took from the one guy, shooting the other guys and using his lightsaber to block their fire. And he kind of leaves one guy alive long enough to tell him basically how bad he is and that he's going to kill the guy they're trying to help. And that's it.
Wow.
Nothing special. I mean, you knew, the instant that I saw those guys there to kill Vader, I knew what was going to happen, but this is the first Star Wars book I read in a long time, and it was cool to see Vader do what he does.
All right.
I'm interested in in some of the solicits that I saw for the upcoming, I think it's like a Boba Fett series from Dark Horse. I don't know if that's right, but it looks good.
Isn't that the one where he's like laying in the sand on Tatooine? He looks like he's baking.
Yeah, yeah. It's like
dead. Yeah.
It's like Boba Fett or something like that.
That might be cool.
Yeah, I hadn't seen it. All right. Well, thanks, guys. And now we're going to move on to the main event. Ian, do we have a coin to be tossed?
Yep, I've got the coin. My favorite Canadian coin, it's the nickel. So we have the beaver on one side and The queen on the other. And Eli, there was some confusion last week. The queen is heads.
The queen is always heads, right?
That's right.
Okay.
Did you steal that coin? Did you steal that coin from your kids too?
Actually, no. I was very well prepared today, and I went and got it in advance.
All right.
I remember this. I remember this coin from the first season. Someone made a comment about the queen and the beaver, and you got onto them a bit because you said we don't talk about the queen like that up here.
No, I know.
It wasn't me, but I'm going to behave nonetheless.
Thanks.
I never talk about the queen that way.
So I think, Jeff, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think Eli gets to call it.
No, I think Gid does. We've been doing
it's the, away team, right?
The away team gets to call it.
Oh,
yeah,
sorry.
He's home. He's home.
Yeah. No, I'm confused. Never mind me. Okay, Gid, so what do you want? Do you want the beaver or the queen?
Give me some beaver.
A beaver it is.
Wow.
So, Gid, do you want to start or do you want Eli to start?
I will allow Eli to go first.
Oh, I appreciate that.
That's a nice gentlemanly thing to do.
Only because he's a fellow Iron Fist fan like myself.
That's right. Number one on the power rankings, baby.
Number one.
So, I like the idea. I know it may seem a little lame and it's not the most well thought out thing, but I love the idea of Simon. I mean, he's been pretty pissed off lately. He flies around, he finds Deathstrike, and he kind of just rips her apart.
End of the rationale.
Look, I know she can repair herself, and the worse the damage, the longer it takes. You know, she can, she's got a cool cybernetic body and adamantium claws, but she's not going to hurt Simon physically at all. I don't really see how that's going to happen. He trades punches with Thor it's not a big deal. I know we always like to bag on Carol Danvers, but he did pretty much own her recently. Even though they didn't really show it, they both went up into the sky and he kind of dropped her like a sack of potatoes when it was done. And she's pretty tough. So, as pissed off as he is, I think he'd blow right through her. Just tear her apart and get back on with his business of taking down the Avengers. I guess I'll have to wait in line and let Norman finish failing. I hate going first. I really do.
All right, Gid, what do you got?
I figured I'd get a little bit longer to get my nap in before it was time for me to talk.
Wow.
All right. So these two appear at the station on opposite ends. Great thing about Lady Deathstrike being part cyborg is that she can interface with the computer systems on board S.W.O.R.D., get his location a whole lot quicker than he can, and she can also access their weapon systems, security, and create some havoc by probably unleashing the rest of the alien villains that are trapped on board the space station to give Simon some trouble. And I'm pretty sure there'll be some guys there who are either tougher or just as tough as Simon is. And yes, he is angry, but he's not this cold, heartless murderer, because as he explained to Tony in the Avengers annual, it's like he's just coming to kick their ass. If he wanted to kill them, that would have been the goal all along. But no, the point is just to expose them. So deep down, he's still a hero. He's still a good guy. He's just a little angrier. Just think the Punisher who can fly around. He's basically now the anti-hero. And again, I don't think he's going to risk the lives of all these S.W.O.R.D. personnel. So yeah, there's too many weapons there that has been pointed out time and time again when people fight on the S.W.O.R.D. station that are just so advanced that they can take out probably Simon. Lady Deathstrike may not even have to do a thing. As Simon's trying to cope with the massive breakout, as well as dealing with the weapon system on board, as well as also probably dealing with S.W.O.R.D. themselves, because him attacking the Avengers was this huge televised event. And plus, he had his team to back him up as well. So I'm pretty sure that S.W.O.R.D. also monitors broadcasts on the planet. So they know of his recent actions. And yes, Lady Deathstrike is no saint, but I'm pretty sure that she will be able to blend in a little bit easier than Simon's glowing pink ass will. And the fact that he isn't intangible, that he had to trade punches with Ms. Marvel, Deathstrike could still pretty much do some damage to him and to his physical form as well. The thing is, though, she is a much better hand-to-hand combatant than Simon will ever be. Regardless of how strong he is, he has to land a punch. And yes, he's traded punches, but those are concussive blows. She pierces him. She can rip him in half. She has no problem stabbing people in the face, the eyes, the throat, the lungs. She is a killing machine, figuratively and literally. So with that said, I'm just pretty sure that the fact that she will have the pretty much the whole station at her command due to the fact that she's able to interface with it probably gives her it definitely gives her more of an edge to beat the hell out of Simon and at least render him unconscious so S.W.O.R.D. can drag his ass away and probably do what Tony couldn't do and hold him in a cell.
All right. I'm pretty much going to say that them doing something that Tony couldn't is ridiculous. They're not going to hold him. Tony couldn't hold him. Tony held him for as long as he did because Simon allowed it. And then when Simon was ready, he took off. So whatever weapons they're going to have, they're not going to do jack against him. And if they have weapons that are going to try and do anything to physically, you know, match what his durability, they're going to destroy the station. The station couldn't handle that. And the fact that, you say he is tangible. We don't know he's tangible. That there's no reason to assume that. Number one, that containment unit Tony had him in, it wasn't busted. It was just empty. So he got out of it somehow. He didn't break his way out. And, I mean, he's an energy being. He's made of energy. That this is why there was some plague in New York or something a while back, and he didn't get infected. He was like the only person in New York City that didn't get infected because he has no biology. He's a being of ionic energy. And so, you know, he might not be intangible in the sense of like, you know, the Prince of Orphans or Kitty Pryde, but, you know, he's made of energy. He doesn't have a physical body. And he didn't trade punches with Carol. They didn't really show any of the fight. So I don't think the Peak's weapons are going to hurt him. Deathstrike can't hurt him. You can't poke a guy made of energy. You can't cut his eyeballs out. You know.
You can sure as hell stab him.
She can sure as heck stab the crap out of him. But I mean, you know, she can stab Iceman too. That's not going to do anything. You know, it's just energy. It's just energy.
And you're right. We don't know how he got out of Tony's trap. He could have had a failsafe and somebody could have ported him out. We don't know. So that's all speculation. The thing is, though, he had to have traded punches with Carol. They didn't sit there and zap each other because he's smart enough to know if he shot her with anything, she'd absorb it and fire it back. He pounded her fist to fist. During his last couple of appearances, I don't remember him not trading punches. I don't remember him being intangible to the point where people either flew through him or their attacks passed through him. He was a solid figure. Made of energy or not, he was solid and he was able to punch and land blows and people were able to punch and land blows on him. So the thing is this. Tony's also his friend. Tony will take it easy. S.W.O.R.D. doesn't care about friendship. They don't care. They will do whatever is in their power to make sure that he is put down. Maybe not kill him, but make sure that he is put down. Tony was also trying to give him a chance to talk. S.W.O.R.D. isn't trying to hear his side of the story. S.W.O.R.D. isn't trying to be lenient. So, like I said, Deathstrike will access the weapons, the entire station, and cause as much chaos and havoc as she can. And like I said, if they meet up, he is cut up, roasted. He is gone. he is gone, because there is too much swinging in her favor to where he'd be able to come out on top unscathed.
All right. There are, what, two ionic beings in the Marvel Universe? The Peak does not have the capability just sitting there waiting in case Count Nefaria or Simon Williams show up and they need to be put down.
Why
because
not?
Because Tony didn't have it.
That's Tony. This is Sword. This is their job 24/7, 365. This is all they do. Tony is busy bagging models, drinking, and fighting
Earth. But the Sword's concerned with aliens. They're not looking toward Earth. Simon is not on their radar. There's no reason for them to have anything to deal with Simon. That is a reach.
And however, Tony, there are alien beings that have powers that mimic his.
Mimic his, but he's a being of ionic energy.
And there are aliens of ionic energy that travel the universe that do bad things that Sword has to contend with. To contend with ionic beings. They have to have a contingency plan for everything. It can't just be that all of a sudden, well, we couldn't contain Simon. I mean, do you honestly think that Sword could not contain Simon?
Yes, that's what I think.
That Deathstrike could not access their weapon system and containment failsafes to combat Simon.
Do you think that Simon, the former Avenger, is going to garner, Deathstrike will get no attention from
I noted that in the beginning. I said that she would still be, you know, bothered, but not as much as Simon, who just basically put down two of the main Avenger teams, how it televised all over, looked pretty pissed and angry. And so he would be dealt with. He would be a priority. And when it comes down to who's the bigger threat, they would perceive it to be Simon. Like I said, they would also have to contend with the fact that she is messing with the systems, using the entire station against them and Simon, and has now released every single criminal on that space station. So the Sword personnel is going to be way too busy to be dealing with Deathstrike, and I'm sorry. They're like stormtroopers and Cobra troops. They're fodder. You honestly think a Sword tech is going to hold his weight up against Lady Deathstrike? It's not happening.
No, she's not against any of these guys, but it's a distraction. It's something she has to deal with.
Right. Now, Simon, on the other hand, like I said, we don't know if he's completely energy or not, because he was able to actually have fist fights. If you're a being of complete energy, you're not throwing down hand to hand. You're shooting your beams. You're flying around. You're doing all that. You're letting attacks pass through you.
Yeah, but maybe, but maybe not, because it's not like he struggled at all. Carol never did anything to him in that fight. Simon was in complete and utter control. He did to her exactly whatever he wanted. There was a confrontation. He threw her back. She came at him. There was a big sonic energy, whatever, boom, and they disappeared. The next thing you see, Carol falls out of the sky a few pages later. So, right. You know, we don't know exactly what he did to her. But the fact is that we've seen him in the past use energy attacks and use physicality. You know, use tangible force.
What we also know is that Carol was taken by surprise. She tried to reason with her friend, former lover, and she tried to talk. He was already past the point of talking, so she was holding back. So he beat the crap out of her real quick. Number one, like I said, surprise. She was trying to reason. And she still had that whole, you know, attachment there, that they had feelings. This isn't the case here.
But that doesn't matter. I mean, Carol and Simon both, I think, take Deathstrike down. But the fact is, you know, just from what we saw of that fight doesn't mean that he doesn't have his energy form anymore. I mean, it's clear that he does. We saw the Kirby, what do they call them? Kirby bubbles?
Yeah, the Kirby dots.
Kirby dots, thank you. He is still made of energy. It was boiling out of his eyes right during the press conference or whatever it was, when he was on the steps of whatever, talking about the Avengers. All right? He has that. And so, you know, it's not like he's changed and he's a human being who can fire ionic energy. No, he's still an ionic being.
But in those two big fights, did we see him display any of that? you would think that fighting two of, you know, the world's top teams, the top Avengers team, that he would have unleashed. Even though he had a little bit of backup, he would have unleashed.
All right, let me ask you this. Simon, based on what we saw, he accomplished in that whole fiasco, in New Avengers and Avengers Annuals and all that, everything he wanted to accomplish. So it's he seemed to be pleased with himself right when he left Tony's little containment bubble. So he planned this out. He did exactly what he planned to do. Just because he didn't display something doesn't mean it's not there. And he did. I don't think he ever struck Tony. Tony just grabbed him and put him in his little bubble. And then Simon just hung out there. He chatted with Beast. And then when
exactly.
no one was looking, he
Tony
was gone.
Tony grabbed him. He was a physical being. He Tony's arms him. Didn't pass through.
What I'm his saying is he let him through. Do that. That was all part of his plan. And he can obviously control himself. Kitty Pryde can control when she's solid and when she's not. And, you know, you talk about the sword having to be the fact that they are prepared for ionic beings. I mean, that's ridiculous.
How is that
how
ridiculous?
How many races of hostile alien ionic beings are there that are cataloged and known? Really?
You tell me.
No, you tell me. You said that they exist. And you said that's why. That's what you based sword's preparedness on. And that's your whole offense is Lady Deathstrike. Commandeering the Peak's defenses against these ionic alien beings that are out there that Sword knows about and is prepared for. So name
no.
some.
Hey guys,
I think yeah.
You
cutting
you
us
both,
off?
Yeah, well, yeah. No, not for time. But I'm saying both of you guys, and I shouldn't do this, but both of you guys should read the this week's Uncanny because it gives a pretty darn good insight in terms of what. Types of facilities the Peak Station has and what types of inmates they can and can't hold. Like, so both you guys should pick up that issue and read it because I think you'd see it'd help you with your, like, it'd give you a bit of ammunition here.
So we'll have to argue that on the forums after we pick that up.
Damn, I have to own a copy of Uncanny X-Men.
Golly, it's horrible.
I think they're doing that to us on purpose because they're mad about the Iron Fist thing.
Yeah, now it's actually even. It's 2-on-2 versus Iron Fist. Mm. But, you know, I don't think the Peak's defenses are going to be able to do anything, so it's going to come down to Lady Deathstrike and her claws against a being made of ionic energy, and there's absolutely no way that she hurts him.
The problem with energy beings, and it's always the same thing every time, you hit them with a counter energy source or something of a different polarity and bam, disperses them and they need to come back. It happens with every single energy being. You just have to be able to do it. Now, I do think Sword has enough energy-based weapons or whatnot to do that. And Lady Deathstrike is a very intelligent and tactical fighter. She knows what she's doing. So
she does,
the fact that she would commandeer the station through, you know, talking to the computer systems and whatnot, and basically she would be one with the Peak. So he's got to fight an entire station, anything that comes at him, and anything that she's released from the cells or whatnot, and then deal with her at the same time. Like I said, he didn't show any type of, you know, phasing ability during his last few appearances. Even way back in Avengers 1 when he popped up, he didn't phase through. He punched through a wall. He came through and spoke with him. It wasn't like, you know, he just popped up. Like, he had a physical fight. Because he is composed of ionic energy doesn't mean that all of a sudden now he can just phase in and out.
Yeah, but it does... But there's nothing to suggest that he can be hurt by adamantium claws, and it's not like anybody with some energy weapons can disperse him. And he was dispersed once by one of Kang's weapons. You know, the guy from the 31st century, whose technology makes Doom look like nothing. And Simon reformed himself on his own.
Yeah, but he had to retreat. He had to go away for a bit, bring himself together.
He retreated to retreat. He didn't retreat to hibernate.
No, I'm not saying he's hibernating, but still, he had to split. And because he knew if he got hit a few more times, that would be it. But he's also been dispersed to where it took him a while.
And the fact is, with what's going on the peak, it's not like all these, you know, stuff is in pristine condition. And Simon's not just a regular dude walking. You know, he can fly beyond the sound. He can break the sound barrier. So he's going to be cruising around.
Right, but are you flying that fast through all the corridors? I mean, I've never seen him fly at that pinpoint type of precision. I mean, he can fly fast, yeah, but those aren't the largest, widest corridors, period.
All right, I'll give you another one. He can also travel outside the station. We know he's just fine in space.
So does he have X-ray vision? How will he find Death Strike in the station? Because look at the picture. The station is huge. It's got the huge orbital ring at the top.
The station is huge.
The column. So how is he going to find her?
If he's outside of it, what's she going to do? He can just pop in and out. And, you know, if we're talking that this station is so advanced that it has all this stuff, they would easily be able to lock down sections where the hull is breached and not cause death to everybody in there. So he just pops in and out.
You also don't think they have guns mounted on the outer hull, though?
Sure, they might, but again, they don't have weapons tailored to Simon. He's a human being. They deal with aliens. And until we see, you show me an alien race that they're aware of that are made up just like Simon of ionic energy. And Tony Stark.
But you're saying that when the X-Men popped up on Sword and the guns they had pointed at them wouldn't have done anything to them because they were human and they deal with aliens. The gun is a gun. Whether they're going to shoot, it's going to do damage.
Simon's not just a strong guy. You know, that you need something tailored to him specifically. Tony knows Simon. He's been on the Avengers with him for decades, and he couldn't contain him. I don't care if you say that Tony's his friend and he didn't want to kill him. Tony's Tony Stark. He can pretty much do anything he puts his mind to.
Sword has access. And his little containment unit. Don't think Sword has access, though.
Access to what Tony has?
Yeah.
No, I don't think Tony shares everything with Tony never shares everything with everybody. But if Tony couldn't do it, then who cares if they have access to what Tony has? Tony couldn't do it. And I dare say that there's probably nobody else on the planet who would be more prepared to stop Simon than Tony, or maybe Count Nefaria, let's say.
Well, the thing is this now. Deathstrike is in their system. She knows. He can pop in and out of the station, but him trying to find her and pinpoint her in that vast station while all the chaos is going on is a waste of time. So that's not happening. Him flying outside the station, popping in and out, that makes him more of a threat, because then if he's crashing through the holes in and out, he's damaging the integrity and again risking the lives of the other people, and he's not just some wild pissed off murderer now. He doesn't even view himself as a bad guy. He only wants to hurt the Avengers, period.
So
he's not going to risk that either. She is going to cause as much chaos and mayhem, use that entire station against him. And yes, she will physically attack him. And until it's shown that he can't be touched by anything physical, then I'm going to say that she will still out hand-to-hand combat him and rip him apart. So, I mean, that's just it. With the whole station, her abilities, and everything at her disposal, Simon does not have a chance.
No, she can't touch him. Even if she gets her claws into his energy form, I'm comparing it to cutting Iceman in his ice form. There's no organs to cut away. There's no damage. There's no body part that's not getting blood when it needs blood. There's no nerves. There's just energy. So she slashes through it. It's like slashing through water. It just goes right back to it. I guess that's about it. And I also seriously doubt that the station has anything that can touch him.
Right. Well, and like we expected, anything less, hey, Jeff?
Yeah, really, seriously. Yeah, but as you guys were sitting there, you could probably hear us typing back and forth about, you know, our thoughts to one another. To Ian and me, Ian and I were talking back and forth about what you guys were talking about. So good, really good arguments.
Yeah, very good. Two of the all time greats going head to head. So we like that. It was perfect. It's important for listeners and managers to understand the circumstances under which these fighters compete. The fighters are teleported onto the peak station on opposite ends of the station, so the furthest points from each other, and the fighters have the full disposal of any and all the resources available to this environment, which is kind of what gives the home team, or should give the home team, a bit of an advantage when they, because they get to pick the environment. Fighters, excuse me, fighters are not allowed to leave an environment, but teleportation and flyers, they're not considered as leaving the environment as long as they come back. Do you know what I mean? Lastly, the winner shall be determined based on the fact that he or she has subdued the opponent's fighter. Subduing can be anything from restraining to killing to making the opponent flee. Next week is our Battle of the Dans. We've got Daniel F. versus Dan Brian, and Dan Brian is home. Is that right, Jeff? Dan's home?
That's correct.
So, and Dan Brian's home, so that means he gets to pick the environment for next week. Right. We'll also have a brand new environment that's going to be added in for next week. So there'll be, what will happen is one of the environments will be removed and placed in a reserve or a backup pool, and a new environment will take its place. And then if somebody wants to use their environment switch card, they can switch the environment, but they also have access to any of the previous environments. So that's kind of a new thing. We've never done that before.
Yeah, I hope that works. I hope that helps the managers out later on. But now is time where we are going to talk about our newest segment on the show, and it is our COC Power Rankings, where Ian and I take it upon ourselves to rank five characters each week in terms of who is the toughest, which is all wonderfully subjective. So if you'd like to submit a character for us to rank, or just want to tell us how stupid you think we are, and we get told that a lot, log in to the comicattack.former.com forums. Tell us what you think in the COC thread labeled Power Rankings. You can also see all of the discussion. I think we're on page 7 or 8 now. Of talking about all of these, it's created quite a buzz on the forum. So tonight's five nominees are, we're going into the realm of magic, and the five nominees are Nico Minoru, I guess that's how you say it, or otherwise known as Sister Grimm from The Runaways, Wiccan, the son of Satan, and Satana, and I just have to say it that way, and Ilyana Rasputin, otherwise known as Magic. So I'm going to actually let Ian go first this week, because I think you actually know a little bit more about some of these characters, and I think you might sway me a little more. I want to hear more about what you have to say before I say mine. So,
sure, yeah. I rank them as, I'll say who I ranked and then why I ranked real quickly. I put them as Satana first, Wiccan second, Son of Satan third, Magic fourth, and Nico as fifth, as the last on that list. And like Jeff said, the theme this week was magic, people. I put Satana first because Satana, in what she's shown me recently in Thunderbolts, is that she's not really held back by anything. She doesn't depend on a staff. She doesn't depend on, you know, any kind of amulets or anything like that. She basically, all of her magics just come straight from her, which in comparison to many of the other people on this list, I think they don't have that. Because some people might argue, you know, Son of Satan, Satana, brother, sister, same powers, blah, 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 blah. But you'll see in a second why I ranked Son of Satan lower. The second one I ranked was Wiccan. The only reason I ranked Wiccan below Satana is because of his youth, his age. He seems naive. He should, you know, when Stephen Strange was looking for the next Sorcerer Supreme, one of the first people he went to was Wiccan, and then he quickly kind of steered away from Wiccan and instead said, "I'll teach you more about, you know, the mystical arts, but you're not the next Sorcerer Supreme. So I think Wiccan's probably the most powerful person on the list, but he's also one of the most inexperienced, maybe in combination with Nico. So I put him as second. Third, I put Son of Satan. And basically for me, Son of Satan and Magic, I kind of saw them as tied. I love the character Magic. So, you know, for anyone who thinks that I'm a homer or anything like that, she's one of my favorite characters in comics. But in her recent state, where she is in current continuity, you know, she's basically a teleporter. And she's very powerful in the realm of Limbo, but the Son of Satan is very powerful in his dimension in Hell. So, you know, either one of these characters, to me, it's a bit of a wash. If they can get the other one into their realm, well, then they're the master of their domain. But while they're on 616 Earth, standing on Earth, they're kind of limited to, you know, what they have. Son of Satan, for all the research that I could do about Damian Hellstrom, is the majority of his power comes from his trident, comes from his staff. So that's why I put Satana in Wiccan above him, because they're not dependent on a tool. They can kind of conjure, bring their magics to them without needing that. It seems as though if you take that trident away from Son of Satan, it diminishes his power a little bit. Magic, like I said, I love, but in Limbo, you can't stop her. On Earth, it's a whole different story. She's a teleporter who carries a flaming sword. And then Nico's, I think there's no question that Nico's the weakest of this group of five. She, a lot like Son of Satan, her magic comes from her trident that she carries around. She's only able to do each spell once. And once she does that spell, if she tries to do it a second time, it either A, won't work, or B, there's no telling what'll happen with this spell. You know, she needs blood to summon her staff. I think she's got too many things that hold her back from being any higher than five on this list. And not only did I put five on this list, I actually put her at the bottom of the whole power rankings too.
All right. God, this is hard. I'm now more confused than ever, but I'll just go with what I originally went, and we can talk about it, I guess, and maybe Gid and Eli can shed some light on some things too. But I ranked Magic at the top, and then Wiccan, followed by Satana, Son of Satan, and I also put Nico at the bottom of the list. And I'll just say, with Magic, yes, she is more powerful in Limbo, but good God, she is so powerful in the regular 616. And the reason that I really ranked her the top is that she's a teleporter, but she can teleport you away, and she can teleport you to Limbo. So where she's more powerful. So so against any of these other people that we're talking about, to me, she can take them completely out of the fight and put her there. I also put her at the top because the X-Men recognize that she is an Omega level threat, and this is evidenced by the fact that she's actually a prisoner on Utopia, even though she serves on Scott's Extinction Team currently. But they know how dangerous she is, and that the recent fight with the Elder Gods and how she manipulated that whole scenario to defeat the Elder Gods and to regain her soul, I think really touched on how powerful she is both in the regular Marvel Universe and especially in Limbo as well. But so that's why I ranked her at the top. Number two, I put Wiccan. And the reason I put Wiccan is because mainly because the fear that the Avengers have in him and his powers as a result of what was going on in the Children's Crusade most recently, that he also has reality warping powers, which to me, reality warping powers almost put you on a pretty high level. Not only is he a mage, but he's also a reality warper, and so because of his connection to Scarlet Witch, and so even though it hasn't quite developed as much, his potential is really there, and so and the fact that the Avengers are always trying to control him, it seems like, points to me that they may know something that even we don't yet about Wiccan's power, but he's pretty darn powerful too. Plus, he can say, "I want you to die," and you would die. He could say that over and over again. And so, anyway, that's just why I put him there. I'll be honest; I don't know much about Satana or Son of Satan. I had to do a lot of research on them, and just looking at kind of their stats online in a couple different places that I looked. They both seem to have kind of the same, a lot of the same kind of powers. Satana can suck on people's souls, and I thought that was, and she can control people. And so I know you guys are all reading Thunderbolts, and I'm not really reading that, so I don't really know her current status as much. So I could be convinced that she's a little more powerful, maybe. But and Son of Satan too, for the same reasons you said, I put him. Near the bottom, because I just don't think that he I don't see him having the same, even though he's more powerful in his level of hell, I don't see him having that same kind of power in the 616 that magic has, where he can just teleport somebody and they be in hell, and then he can do whatever he wants to with them. But and then, of course, for the exact same reason you said, even though Nico is my favorite character of all of these five, I would definitely put her at the bottom, because she's so untrained, and she can't repeat spells and all that. So, y'all respond? What do y'all think in terms of the Satana, Son of Satan thing?
I don't know anything about any of these people. I dropped Thunderbolts when the Satana joined the team. I've read the first Runaways trade. I can't remember it. Was Nico, was that the first one of the kids to realize their parents were evil?
Yeah, she was in the original group of Runaways.
Okay,
yeah.
I think that's all I remember.
Yeah.
And I know Wiccan is dating Hulkling. Is that it?
That's right.
And he's a Scarlet Witch's
son.
Fake kid? Is that the real one or the one she made up?
I think she made him up, but he's real now.
He's real now, okay.
He's a real boy.
He's a real boy.
Beat me to it.
Oh, and in Civil War, Falcon had to get in his face and make him teleport them away when Falcon and Steve rescued the Young Avengers. That's all I got.
Yeah, when they were driving that truck.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, do you have any light to shine on any of this?
Well, like, I would definitely put I would put magic at the top. I agree with you on that. I actually think that she's allowing them to hold her hostage there.
Well, that's true.
And she's there because of her brother. I honestly think that she's allowing Scott to think that collar was doing anything to her. I would put her at the top. I would actually put Satana second, because kind of like Ian said, she has nothing to hold her back. If she wants to do it, she'll pretty much do it. It's no moral high or low ground. She just wants to get the job done. It gets real weird when you get to Son of Satan, because I haven't seen him do anything real impressive in any of the years. He's just like your standard magic user. He'll do like one or two cool things. Nico would definitely be at the bottom. Wiccan, just for his inexperience though, I'd put him like right above her. But, and you're right, she does have so many limitations. A spell one time, she needs blood every time, and it's just, I don't know. Whoever thought of those limitations is a real asshole.
Okay, so in the overall rankings, and I get to set this tonight, right?
Hey Jeff, can I just say one thing before
you
go?
Yeah, sure.
One thing to consider too is that magic, I'm a huge Magic fan. Like I bet you I'm probably her biggest fan on the planet. Always have been. She can't do magic on 616, right? Like, you guys know that, right?
Yeah, she can.
What does she do?
She has her soul sword, and that's magical.
But her soul sword just cuts through things. Like, I mean, Satana, Wiccan, and Son of Satan, and Nico, they can all perform spells on 616.
She can't? I thought she could.
No, she can't. She can only perform her spells in Limbo.
Okay.
So she can open a portal and bring demons and stuff from Limbo, which is pretty cool. But in terms of spell casting and all that kind of stuff like that, it only works in Limbo. It does. She has none of those powers in Right. 16.
But see, there again, I just would say that magic could just teleport you to Limbo and then, you know, defeat
but Satana
you there.
But Satana can teleport her to hell.
Oh, well.
Right, that was my whole thing, right? Like she,
right.
And for me, that was the breaking point because Satana and Wiccan, they can perform their spells on 616. No hindrances, no anything. Do you know what I mean? Like there's no, and Gid reads Thunderbolts, he's seen it. Satana does whatever she wants on 616, like whatever she wants on 616. For magic to use any magic, she has to take them to Limbo.
Right.
Anyway, sorry, I just had to throw that out.
Okay, well that's helpful. That's helpful actually. And I'll give you that, and I'll bump her up a little bit to where I originally had her. But there again, I still think magic. I think she could still win. So here's my overall ranking. I'm putting magic at the top. I'm putting these magic characters near the top, except for Nico. and Son of Satan, because honestly, I think Luke Cage could punch him out. But anyway, let me start from the top. I put magic at the top. I'll put Satana second, followed by Wiccan, then Sebastian Shaw, Spider-Man, Thing, Cyclops, Iron Fist, Captain America, Hulkling, Cannonball, Deadpool, Warpath, Shang-Chi, Gambit, Daredevil, Black Panther, Luke Cage, then Son of Satan, then Nico.
Gambit should still be at the bottom.
Yes.
Yep. So, what do you think about that, Ian?
Do you want me to read mine?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so I say Satana top, then Wiccan, then Sebastian Shaw, Spider-Man, Thing, Cyclops, and then here's where Gid and Eli get angry. Son of Satan and Magic, both above Iron Fist. Mostly because I think Iron Fist's capabilities are magic based, and both of them can probably manipulate that. Captain America, Hulkling, Cannonball, Deadpool, Warpath, Shang-Chi, Gambit, Daredevil, Black Panther, Luke Cage, and then Nico at the bottom. And I can't see Nico ever leaving that bottom.
Yeah, I agree. But you know, I mean, I don't know. I just don't see Son of Satan being as powerful as I don't see him being more powerful than magic, at all.
No, I saw them as a tie, total tie.
Okay, all right. But I would actually, I mean, I just have never seen. I mean, I did a lot of research on Son of Satan, and I couldn't find anything that really showed off what he has done. I mean, sure, he's got these powers, but I like to see what they've actually done in the comic books, and I can't see him beating anybody. He was on the Defenders for a while.
Did you read the Brother Voodoo stuff, Jeff?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, he did some pretty cool shit in Brother Voodoo.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Am I getting that right, Gid? You read Brother Voodoo, right?
I read a few issues, but he was also called in during New Avengers too.
That might be where I'm confusing it with. And he's so basically he is magic. He's the male version of magic. He's got his own section of hell, and he's the prince of that section. Do you know what I mean? Just like magic's the ruler of Limbo, they both have their sort of sections, and they can teleport there and. There they reign supreme and blah. Anyway, sorry. Okay.
All right. Well, here's what I'm going to do just to make it a little more fair because honestly, I mean, my main argument for Sebastian Shaw being at the top of the list was because, you know, any force that you put on him, he's going to retaliate. But you know, if what you're saying is true, I mean, basically all of these magic characters except for Nico, could really get the better of Sebastian Shaw because they don't have to necessarily. Punch him or kick him or blast him with anything in order to subdue him. So what I'll do is in the final rankings, I'll put Magic, Satana, Wiccan, Son of Satan, and then the rest of all the other guys, and then Nico at the very bottom.
Oh, that's a travesty. Okay.
Okay, can we live with that?
Sure.
Okay. What's the travesty of it? The Son of Satan being so high?
No, yeah. I think Spider-Man... Cyclops, Thing. I think those guys beat those guys. I think there's no way the Son of Satan beats Spider-Man. Like not in a million years. Anyway, it doesn't matter though. Whatever.
Yeah.
It really doesn't matter. It's all subjective.
It is.
All right. So thanks for listening to episode 24 of COC Live. Go to comicattack.former.com under COC to vote for who you think is the most deserving to win in tonight's fight. If you have any questions that you'd like to have answered on the show, email them to jeff@comicattack.net or capekiller@yahoo.ca. We'd love to see millions of people arguing the fights in the forum. So feel free to post in the fight thread itself. Also, look for us on Twitter at COC Comic Attack. Did I say that right?
That's right. Yeah, you got it.
We record every Sunday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, so be sure to get your votes in before then. After some top-notch editing work done by Jeff, the fight's posted and ready for listening, usually by the following Tuesday.
Yeah. So anyway, join us next week as we have the Battle of the Dans with Dan Brien facing Daniel Fabrizio and their characters, which should be a lot of fun. So thank you to Eli for joining us again, back-to-back weeks. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show, Mr. Eli.
Yeah, thanks. It's been fun.
And we really didn't piss you off too bad this time, did we?
No.
Not as bad as last week.
Last week was bad.
Yeah, it was bad.
I felt bad last week, so I toned it down.
You should.
and always we give thanks to the ever forgiving Infinite Speech for joining us with and gracing us with his presence. If he's there, is he gone? Did he fall asleep?
No, I said anytime.
Oh, okay. Sorry, we didn't hear you there. And my co-host, as always, Mr. Ian Johnson. Thanks for being here, Ian.
Thanks. Yeah, I got a lot of angry emails from male nurses. That's why I thought I'd
tone it down a little bit.
Tone it down. Yeah, it was not good.
Are you serious?
No, I'm not serious.
I was gonna say, oh my god.
Awesome. Well, until next week, guys. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you next week.
See you, Jeff. We love you.
Let's get ready to rumble! Contest.